We have a lot of battles going on in a whole variety of areas here in this country. And one battle we have is preventing, controlling, and containing aquatic invasive species. It's an ongoing fight being fought in Wisconsin, a whole lot of places. And we have one of those soldiers with us today. Larry Mueller here, and my guest Tim Campbell is the Aquatic Invasive Species Outreach Specialist with the University of Wisconsin Extension. Are you participating in any programs to help stop the spread of aquatic invasives? Love to hear about that. You may have questions about invasives. I hope you'll join in our conversation. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. And Tim Campbell, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thanks, Larry. Great to be here.
Well, last Saturday was the 4th annual Aquatic Invasive Species Day. Unfortunately, it's already gone by, but tell us about the event anyway and why it was started.
So Snapshot Day is a really unique event for aquatic invasive species monitoring. In the past, we've had a lot of professionals and really dedicated volunteers out looking for aquatic invasive species on the landscape at really regular intervals. But what we've noticed with a lot of our volunteers is that maybe one-off commitments help out a little bit. Yeah. And so what we've been doing with Snapshot Day is we have one day where we have volunteers from across the state. We have over 200 volunteers going to 18 different host sites. They get trained to look for a set of specific invasive species, and they go out and look at a number of bridge crossings where we often find invasive species. So we get a whole bunch of citizen data all in one day for invasive species. And then this year, it used to only be rivers and streams, but it was lakes, and we also partnered with Minnesota. So they ran a very similar event in Minnesota, too.
Very cool. So they were, what were they really looking for, the specifics? Did you zero in on a few? Or?
So in the past, we've specifically looked for some of our water garden plants, water lettuce and water hyacinth, things that are really easy to identify and see from a bridge crossing. They can also sample for some macroinvertebrates like zebra mussels or snails. They can also look for crayfish species as well.
And can anybody get involved in this? They have to have the training, I assume. But
anyone can get involved with this. So next year, if you think this sounds really awesome and you want to be involved, just look at the River Alliance of Wisconsin website, and you can sign up. It tells you where all the host sites are. It's about an hour training ahead of time, and then maybe 2 to 3 hours of field work looking at different sites. And then you come back, and it's instant gratification. An expert will be there to tell you what you found and help you report your data.
Yeah, that's very cool. You said there were about 200 people involved this past time. How do those 200 people or any number of people help you in your own work?
In my own work, so I help coordinate a network of about 50 aquatic invasive species partners. We call them the Wisconsin Aquatic Invasive Species Partnership throughout the state. So I'm helping coordinate their outreach programs, providing them new materials. If they have questions on things, I help answer those things. And so these volunteers work most closely with our AIS partners. And so what'll happen is after Snapshot Day, we'll hear that our volunteers really could have used this. And
yeah,
I'll spend the next couple of months developing that.
And what areas of the state were covered?
The entire state gets covered. I know the Lake Winnebago area receives a lot of coverage with the Fox Wolf Watershed Alliance and previously with Calumet County. I know the St. Croix River had some coverage, but we tend to be pretty well spread out throughout the state.
And have you, all right, it has only been a few days. Anything interesting so far that you've been able to glean?
I have not heard anything yet except how successful the events were. It sounds like some of the weather held off for folks, and we know we had a lot of engagement, but I haven't seen any of the data yet.
Mike in Madison has a question for you. Let's go there. Mike, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, good afternoon. I had a question in relation to the hydroponics, fish farming, as well as the invasives. I was wondering what the federal regulations, and if you wanted to do an indoor fish farm like that, what would be the hoops that you'd have to jump through for the government regulation hoops? I'm assuming you have to work with the DNR in Wisconsin as well as the federal wildlife and fish gaming. I'm assuming there's probably a dozen
different places. Tim, is this out of your area, or is this?
This is a little bit out of my area. What I can say is that my office at the DNR is on the same floor as fisheries. And I'm sure somebody over there could answer that question. I know that there's a process to go through, and I am fairly certain somebody within the Fisheries Bureau at the DNR would be happy to help you walk through that process.
Okay, so fisheries within the Department of Natural Resources, and I would think they'd have the information on any federal things, too.
Correct.
So that's where you need to go. Go to that DNR website, look up fisheries, and you can make your contact right there, Mike. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. You had another event that you were involved in that happened over the July 4th weekend. What was that about?
That was our 4th of July landing blitz. As far as our aquatic invasive species program goes, we're really active and visible during the summer, and the 4th of July landing blitzes really are kind of premier flagship program. And we know that the 4th of July is a really busy boating holiday. And we also know there's a lot of people that boat only on the 4th of July. So it's a great opportunity to get out there and talk to a lot of different boaters, including some that might not receive our message any other time of the year. So we get volunteers from across the state talking to boaters, educating them on what they can do to prevent the spread of aquatic invasive species.
Just right at the landing sites.
Yep, right at the landing sites. Most people would recognize these folks as the people in the blue shirts, the Clean Boat, Clean Waters volunteers. And in 2016, during the landing blitz, we inspected almost 15,000 watercraft and spoke to 33,000 people.
Wow. John on Facebook wanted to thank you, Tim, for helping the Green Bay Aquarium Society start a surrender network where people can surrender unwanted aquatic pets, no questions asked. This gives people an option other than release. And in their first year, we have been able to keep over 100 animals from being released. They have two surrender events a year. The next one's in October.
Yeah, John and the Green Bay Aquarium Society have been a fantastic partner. So while I'm here mostly today talking about watercraft and boaters, another pathway of aquatic invasive species is the release of unwanted pets and water garden plants. And we just find that people don't have a lot of great solutions for aquarium pets and exotic pets when they can't take care of them any longer. Pet stores can't always take them back in. Humane societies can't always take care of them. But luckily, the Green Bay Aquarium Society up in Green Bay has been helping people rehome unwanted exotic pets. And then Kingdom Animalia Exotic Animal Rescue in Green Bay has also been helping us.
So some good help there. Doug in Mequonigo has a question. Hi, Doug.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
I was watching. Actually, I went to see John Gillespie speak, and he was showing some videos of him fishing down on Lake Havasu, Arizona, and catching these enormous bluegill. But they're a long-eared sunfish, and their nickname is shellcrackers. And they, I guess, they've gotten so huge down there because somebody took their boat from up here to down there, and he introduced zebra mussels into Lake Havasu.
Oh.
Well, these bluegills eat these zebra mussels, and they've gotten to be enormous because it's like a limitless food supply for them.
Well, that's something. You know what? We've got to take a quick break here. We can address that a little bit, I think, after we take a look at the news. Tim Campbell, our guest, aquatic invasive species outreach specialist with UW Extension, will be back right after the news. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here taking a look at aquatic invasives today, zeroing in a little on plants, but other invasives as well. They have a big effect on our waterways, and there are things you and I can do to help stop their spread. Tim Campbell with us to talk about it. He's the aquatic invasive species outreach specialist with UW Extension. What's your experience with aquatic invasives? Give a call at 1-800-642-1234. Send us an email at talk@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. We had Doug on the line talking about in the South, I forget where, somebody from up here had introduced zebra mussels into a lake, And the bluegill-like fish that were feeding on the zebra mussels were getting to be enormous size.
Yeah, so I think what Doug was mentioning was Lake Havasu, and actually the whole southwest part of the United States, they're dealing with quagga mussel and zebra mussel invasions right now. And there's a handful of big reservoirs down there that have really dense populations of these mussels. And so I think some researchers were looking in control mechanisms, and they knew this species of sunfish specialized in eating snails and mussels. So they did some tests to see if this sunfish could control the mussels. And I think what they found out was that while this sunfish can eat zebra mussels and quagga mussels, it can eat a lot of them and they can get really big. It's not quite enough to actually control the zebra mussels. So I think this is a case of nature hates to waste energy. So things learned how to eat it. But I don't think it's a silver bullet for controlling zebra mussels.
Mm. Lynn in Three Lakes has something for us. Hi, Lynn.
Hi. I'm part of the Three Lakes Waterfront Association, and we represent 20 lakes on our Three Lakes chain. And we have an Adopt a Shoreline volunteer program that's fantastic in watching over the shorelines throughout the summer for invasive species. And then we also, I just this year started a dive team so that when we do find something like Eurasian milfoil, we can go right there and try to eradicate, you know, as much as we can.
That sounds like a great program, Lynn. How did you get the training and organization for it?
Well, the Three Lakes Waterfront Association has been in existence for quite a while. And so as we got, we found the Eurasian milfoil on a few spots on the chain, we got on it right away in contacting the DNR, making sure that our volunteers know what the invasives look like, what to look for as they watch over the shorelines on their lake. And then this year we realized that instead of using private concerns to deal with any Eurasian milfoil that we find, it was perhaps better to develop our own dive team. And so that's what we're working on right now. And we, in fact, they were just out yesterday on one of the lakes for several hours taking away some Eurasian.
That sounds really cool, Tim.
Yeah, thank you for your efforts, Lynn, and for your Three Lakes AIS program. It sounds really awesome. Be interested to hear how your experience with the dive team goes moving forward. That's a really awesome resource that you guys have developed.
Okay, well, then we will be in touch with you on that, Tim.
All right, thanks, Lynn, for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, 800-642-1234. Eurasian milfoil is one of the nasty ones.
It is. And I wish I had the up-to-date numbers of how many lakes Eurasian water milfoil is in Wisconsin. I think it's a couple hundred. I'd have to double-check my numbers. But it's one of those things that does seem like a lot of lakes, but we have 2,000 lakes in Wisconsin with public access, 15,000 lakes in Wisconsin. So most of our lakes in Wisconsin don't have Eurasian water milfoil. So it's great that folks are working on identifying it when it shows up, removing it when they can. And then we have our network of Clean Boats, Clean Waters volunteers helping people prevent the spread of it.
Yeah. If you go down and let's say you're a diver and you go down to pull it out, or what do you do?
Really carefully. So you do need to be somewhat skilled in plant identification. Eurasian water milfoil does look like native northern water milfoil. So you want to make sure that you are pulling Eurasian water milfoil, and then even little fragments of the plant can start a new colony someplace else. So you need to be very careful about gently pulling the plant up and then having containment mechanisms like a bag or something like that to put the plant in.
Yeah, I would think so. Matt in Wausau emailed to ask if there are any success stories regarding stopping an invasive aquatic species from invading. Should we be putting more energy into learning how to live with them, exploit them? Seems like a lot of them are here to stay, is his comment.
So I would say yes to all of the above. There are success stories of us finding aquatic invasive species and then having successfully eradicated them. We have a number of instances where we found water lettuce and water hyacinth out on the landscape, water garden plants that were likely released into the environment. And those are fairly easy to control when we find them because they're very obvious floating on the surface. Mm-hmm. So we've been able to pick those out, and we haven't seen those populations come back. So that's great. And then a really great example is in Germantown, Wisconsin, where we've discovered the red swamp crayfish. I think that was in 2009. And with the help of some Great Lakes Restoration Initiative funding and a lot of work from the University of Wisconsin Center for Limnology and the Wisconsin DNR, they implemented a really rigorous control program. And I think this year there were no red swamp crayfish discovered in that pond. So
wow,
a lot of effort, $1 million later, I don't think we have that invasive species anymore.
And what does it do? I mean, it just, I imagine it.
Yeah, so the red swamp crayfish is, if you've ever had a crawfish boil, you probably had red swamp crayfish. And it gets a little bit bigger than our native crayfish. It's more aggressive, so it's hard for our native fish to eat. But it also does a lot of burrowing, and it has been known to cause earthen dams to fail. So it can be really problematic that way.
We have, you know, last time you were on, we talked about the spiny water flea. I think the last time you were on, we did. What's going on in that area?
So I don't think we've discovered a new lake with spiny water fleas in it since we've been on, which is fantastic. So I'm going to pat myself on the back and say our prevention programs are doing really well. And I'd like to thank everyone for following the Stop Aquatic Hitchhiker's guidance of inspect, remove, drain, never move. That helps a lot. But I think we're still kind of trying to implement our prevention programs to make sure it doesn't move around. There's people doing research to figure out what impacts it has on lakes so we can better understand that. I know the Minnesota Aquatic Invasive Species Research Center has taken a really real big interest in spiny water flea. So they're looking into and doing some research on some questions that I've had about the species.
I had some fun voicing a video on the spiny water flea, and they're a nasty little...
Yes.
Creature.
Especially when they're portrayed as, I guess, a World War II general. if you're interested in the video we're talking about, you can go to stopthespiny.com and check it out. It's a really interesting video on the impacts of spiny water flea and how to prevent their spread. And then Dr. Brett Shaw and I have also been using that video to do some evaluation of different communication techniques to figure out how we can better communicate about aquatic invasive species.
And Jill reminds me that we've got that up on our Facebook page, haven't we, Jill? Yeah, it's up. That whole video is on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. So if you want to take a look at it, you can just go and do that. I have some more questions for you. By the way, join in with your own experiences here as we talk aquatic invasive species. Give a call at 1-800-642-1234. I'd love to hear from you with your own experiences and your own questions. So give a call or email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. Let's talk about the drain campaign, Tim, you're targeting boaters.
So after the success we had with the 4th of July landing blitz, we realized that these concentrated efforts were really great at reaching a lot of boaters with a specific message. And in Wisconsin, we're really good about evaluating our outreach campaigns. In our last boater angler survey, we found out that a lot of anglers had difficulty understanding the laws regarding water transport, which is that you need to drain all of your water before you take your boat on a public roadway. And most people knew they needed to drain the water, but if they were transporting fish home, they did it in their live wells in water, which was technically illegal. So to help, I guess, people understand that law a little bit better, we implemented the drain campaign. And instead of just simply telling people that they couldn't do that any longer, we purchased a whole bunch of ice packs. And when we informed people of the laws regarding water transport, we also gave them an ice pack, an alternative behavior. So instead of transporting your fish home on water or in water, do it on ice.
Yeah.
That's how a lot of the professionals do it. It leads to better table fare, and it helps prevent the spread of invasive species.
Yeah, very good. Mark in Green Bay has something for us. Hi, Mark.
Hi, I'm going to be a thorn in your side, probably. Every time we have an invasive species, it's the end of the world as we know it. It was smelt, alewife, white perch, ruff, shad, zebra mussels, quagga, phragmites, spiny water flea, you name it. Oh, my gosh, it's the end of the world. The fishery is going to collapse. Well, it turns out the fishery in Green Bay, at least, is really dynamic, and it could roll the punches of invasive species. I'm not advocating putting them in, but there are people in the DNR that build fiefdoms around eradication. So in the case of Phragmites, they sprayed 108 miles of shoreline, almost 34,000 acres. Now the water's back up, and we've lost the buffer, and there's erosion on the shoreline. So I would say look out for unintended consequences and learn to live with what we've got out there.
All right, Mark, thanks for calling. Tim, you want to comment on that?
Yeah, that's a great comment, Mark. And while I can't comment specifically on the Phragmites, I do think we've had some instances where it was maybe a little bit boy who cried wolf, where things weren't as impactful as we thought they were. But I guess I try to think of it more as that whenever we introduce a new species, there's the possibility for change, and we are all pretty set in our ways. We like things generally how they are, and anytime we introduce a new species, there's a lot of uncertainty on what it could do, and oftentimes, you know, even if it's just one every 10 or one every 20 times, it causes a lot of problems. It causes a lot of problems. And that really makes it worth it, our time, to prevent the spread of these things.
Yeah, sometimes when it's bad, it's really bad, and then we have to do something.
Yes.
There is there does seem to be a little bit, anyway, in many instances, of sort of a balance being reached. I'm thinking of not so much necessarily aquatic plants, but I'm thinking of insects, for example, that might be terrible for a while, and then for some one reason or another, they, you know, nature, Mother Nature kind of takes care of it, and they go back to a sort of a, you can live with it.
Yeah, and I think if I look at the Great Lakes as an example, we were finding new species so often that it couldn't quite come to an equilibrium, and it was really hard to manage that ecosystem. And I'm not saying it's any easier now, but we have least not added any new invasive species since 2006. So it's been a lot easier to help figure out what's going on. And I guess in regards to this topic, I can't quote exactly who did the research, but I know UW Center for Limnology has really looked into, you know, how bad invasive species can be across the landscape and how often they have impacts. So I'd encourage you to check out that research and see what they have to say on it.
Yeah, Mark, thanks a lot for calling. You can join in too, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. We've talked about a couple, but what are some of the species on your invasive list that you'd really like to make people aware of? And
so, as part of my job, I help the Wisconsin DNR and University of Wisconsin Extension respond to new invasions. And something we've been doing a lot of work on recently is starry stonewort, which is an invasive macro algae. So it looks like a plant, but it's technically an algae. That's been found in a few lakes in southeast Wisconsin and then Sturgeon Bay and Door County. And it can be really problematic. It has a lot of the same impacts as our other aquatic invasive plants, but there's no good herbicide treatment for it. Mm-hmm. So it's really difficult to manage. So we've been doing a lot of work on that. And then also the round goby, which is something that a lot of people in the Great Lakes know about, but it was recently discovered in Menasha, right below the last dam that goes into Lake Winnebago. And it's currently only known to be there in Little Lake Butamore. So we're doing a lot of work to try to figure out where round goby might be in inland waters. So far, we haven't found them anywhere else yet. And doing a lot of education to try to make sure people know that they can't transport round gobies, they can't use them as bait, and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, what are they? What are they like?
So round gobies are a small benthic fish, or a fish that lives on the bottom. They eat a lot of fish eggs, other macro invertebrates. They can also eat zebra mussels and quagga mussels. I guess of note, they eat a lot of lake sturgeon eggs. And they've been known to do that in the Great Lakes. So I would not like to see them get into Lake Winnebago. One-of-a-kind sturgeon fishery there.
For sure. And the starry, was it starry stonewort?
Correct.
What's that like again?
So it's an invasive macroalgae. It just looks like a plant. I think, and Paul Skowinski is probably listening and will make fun of me later about it. But to me, it just looks like a green twig. There's not a lot of leaves or anything on it. It's kind of branchy, but it has a really unique identifying characteristic. It has a bulbil that looks like a little star, and it'll be in the sediment. So if you pull that up, it I guess it looks like a native algae, a Acara species, but if you pull it up and you see this little starry bulbil, starchy seed, essentially.
That's what it is. Okay. Yep. Brian in Fond du Lac, your turn now. Hi, Brian. Thank you for calling.
I just got a hold of some information a while ago about a new invasive species in the Great Lakes, I think particularly Lake Michigan, called red shrimp. And apparently a lot of the professional fishermen, guides and so on, have been discovering that the fish have been eating them like crazy. What are the detriments on this particular species?
Great question. I think bloody red shrimp is actually the most recent invasive species to have been discovered in the Great Lakes, 2006. There's a invasive zooplankton. We're not exactly sure what it got there. But anyway, things have been known to be eating it. And I think we've been trying to figure out what its impacts are since it's been invaded, or since it's invaded. And it seems to be pretty unclear. We find them in really high densities places. I guess people diving on shipwrecks will see big red clouds of them. But now we're starting to see that fish will eat them. So hopefully there's not much of a downside, and it just ends up being another food source for fish in the Great Lakes.
Well, thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's see, we've got another question coming up here. But in terms of information's or information about invasives, you have an invasive species list, do you not, that people with photos and such that people can get?
Yeah, so on the Wisconsin DNR website, we have our list of NR40 prohibited and restricted species and their resources there that you can identify or use to identify species. There's also information on the DNR website that has fact sheets. And then we also have the Wisconsin Sea Grant webpage that has different invasive species on it, and then our Wisconsin Fish ID app. So we know we have a lot of anglers out there. So if you catch a fish, you don't know what it is, the Wisconsin Fish ID app that you can get on the Wisconsin Sea Grant webpage can help you with that. And then we also have some Invader of the Great Lakes field guides. Unfortunately, it's only print. So if you're interested in one of those, we can probably find a way to get you one.
Another person had a question about herbicides and the use of herbicides in water. It seems like, you know, some people are kind of reluctant to, you know, think about using herbicides. And other people say, what herbicides can I use to get rid of this or that?
So the Wisconsin Aquatic Plant, or Wisconsin DNR Aquatic Plant Management Program, is doing a lot of research to try to figure out ideal herbicide treatments for, you know, invasive and nuisance plants. And yeah, I would say it's a little bit outside of my expertise, but I do know we have a lot of great people in Wisconsin working on this to try to make it so that way when we do apply herbicide, it's as effective as it possibly can be, but then to also identify situations where it's maybe better to just let things go. So if somebody has a specific question on herbicides, I'd love to be able to connect them with the right person to answer that question.
Okay. If you think about just sort of overall the effects of aquatic invasives on Wisconsin waters, do we have any idea of the impact that they have combined?
That's a great question, and I think we've done a good job of, you know, here's a single invasive species, and this is how it impacts the environment and the economy. I know there's researchers really interested in looking at kind of the holistic impacts of aquatic invasive species, and so I'm really looking forward to see, you know, what that research has to say. But I guess when I think about it, aquatic invasive species, there's impacts. Sometimes maybe we don't realize the impacts, but I guess, you know, I've lived in Wisconsin now for almost 7 years, and I know we have this very this outdoor heritage that we all love. We love going to the lake and spending time on it, and aquatic invasive species can really impact, you know, how we do that and some of the memories we have and make when we're out on our waters.
Well, when you look at some of the Madison lakes as an example, if you're trying to fish from the shore, or you know, the number of the amount of some invasive plants can really...
Yep. And a story that always sticks with me is perch fishing in Milwaukee. You know, people growing up being able to just pull fish out with a cane pole off the break wall. all day, and that's not something that I can really do anymore, partially because of invasive species. So I hope that by preventing the spread of invasive species, you know, the memories that I might have made when I was a kid or that I make now, you know, somebody has the opportunity to do that 50 years from now.
Well, that's a great way to close, although John wondered if you had knew anything about the kill-off of fish in Lake Elwood and what typically causes that. You probably don't know about Lake Elwood, but...
I unfortunately do not. I can say that there's a lot of different reasons for a fish kill, but if I found out more on where Lake Elwood is, I can probably point somebody in the direction of who to talk to figure out what's going on.
And again, for where are the best websites to go to for more information?
DNR.wi.gov and keyword search aquatic invasive species, or the Wisconsin Sea Grant webpage, seagrant.wisc.edu.
Yeah, that's a Sea Grant page is a nice page as well.
Yep.
Tim, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Larry. It's been great.
It's been wonderful. Tim Campbell is the aquatic invasive species outreach specialist with UW Extension. Fun talking with him about aquatic invasive species, and I'm sure we will be doing it again. Just to mention, coming up at 1 today, Kathleen Dunn talks with baseball legends Bob Uecker and Bud Selig. That sounds like a lot of fun to me. That's at 1 o'clock on the Ideas Net. Tomorrow, John Freiberger will be back with us to answer your questions about home improvements, so I hope you'll join us for that at 11 o'clock. In the meantime, thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store.